find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hey, this is Brian from the Verf Pipe, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? Welcome on back to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Rocking our way, I guess you could say, to what? Mike, episode 400 would be our next benchmark, I guess. Scary thunder.
It's like 350 something is 3 1/4.
I don't even know. If you're allowed to celebrate anymore? Yeah, I don't know. Because at the rate we're going, we're going to hit 400 by the end of the year with the amount of episodes we've been putting out. But don't worry, people. We're going to pull back and give you less content. You'll get your wish. You'll get your wish. But right now, we're bored.
Yeah.
We're bored, and it's still pandemic season. That's what I'm saying. So, good.
I'm guessing at some point that, like, hey, Scott, you have a baby. Stop freaking podcasting 2 nights a week.
Yeah, I can almost guarantee that, Mike, when I have this baby, it's going to be probably once a week. at least for a little while.
Probably once a week. Yeah, when you get like 5 minutes, we're going to have to come up with like 6 weeks of banter all
at
the same time.
Mike, the baby's sleeping. We better crank out some banter like now. who knows?
So further, I was flipping through the channels and I saw the Dukes of Hazzard. Dukes of Hazzard! All right, well, that's our episode tonight, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, I was actually thinking.
Woke the baby again.
I was thinking about that, though. If the baby is one of those babies, God willing, that has a sleep schedule, we really only need, like, what, 90 minutes a week? That's generally what we need, you know? Like. So I think we'll be okay. I think it'll be a little rocky at first, but we'll figure it out. Don't worry, guys. We're not going anywhere. Don't worry. The birth of my baby is not the end of the podcast. You cannot get rid of us that easily. So, yeah, it's been it wouldn't be a podcast if I didn't show up to the minute, sweating my ass off, covered in paint. It just feels like that's what I do now. I'm paint. Oh wow, it is like thundering like crazy here. Whoa. Big scary thunder. I don't know if you heard
that.
My
Zoom workout, our gentleman, he was doing it from the park, and even under an awning, he was wondering if he was going to get the workout in.
Yeah, being under a metal awning?
Well, he was in the park, so I don't know, like a gazebo or something like that.
Yeah.
He was in doing exercises because he does like park exercises, and he also teaches over Zoom.
Yeah.
But like halfway through, he's like, lift. He's like, oh.
Yeah. So yeah, everybody, welcome to the show. If you're just tuning in, that's Mike. I'm Scott, and this is the Verbal Shenanigans podcast, a weekly podcast that kind of just dives into the into life a little bit. But we always have an interesting guest, and we have not gone guestless in over 2 years at least. So I know we always mention this, but I don't remember what episode was the last time we had no guests, but it was somewhere in the hundreds, I think. So
102, if I recall off the top of my head.
102. Okay, so yeah, 198 episodes ago. So we're also coming off in a great episode last week with William Hung from American Idol. So if you like what you hear now, check that out from last week. And you got to stick around to the end because Mike tells a story that is pretty ridiculous. It goes down in one of the top stories we've had ever on the podcast. Put it this way, Mike is a swinger now. So that's what I got out of it.
Anyway. I got offered. I got offered the opportunity to do it. I did not go forth with it, but I was courteous enough to tell him that his football team's owner died a week late. So just to keep that in mind. I'm a good person. Just because I don't swing with you doesn't mean I stop the conversations with you.
Right. I'm just finishing up watching my I'm in a good mood. I'm just finished watching Liverpool hoist their first league trophy in 30 years. So it was pretty cool. They actually did a nice job with the no fans there. It was pretty sweet. They like kind of darkened the whole stadium, so the stage was all lit up, and they brought everyone out one at a time, and it was pretty good. Like, it wasn't like awkward and weird with no fans there. And it was crazy because there was about 8 minutes left in the game, and fans are all surrounding outside the stadium, just lighting fireworks off. All you hear for the last 8 minutes is like while the guys are still playing. It's insane over there, man. But
now, who carried the asterisk around?
What was that? Oh, the asterisk.
Who carried the asterisk around? It was the season was shifted because of the pandemic. So by rule, we had to put an asterisk by it, so you can always have to say, "Oh, well, yeah, we won it, but
that hurts,
you know,
my heart."
That was a pandemic year, so
no. Because listen, they needed 4 points to be clear that they probably could have lost every game after the pandemic and won probably by the end of the season. They would need Man City to win every single game and them to lose every game for them to have a chance. So they needed 4 points.
Well, thanks to this curse, we'll never know, Scott. So,
who knows?
Leicester City might have appeared out of nowhere. You don't know that.
Leicester City.
They're my boys, Leicester City, just because I remember them.
Leicester City fighting for fourth place, fighting for a Champions League spot. They should know on Sunday. I know I don't want to bore everyone with sports, but I went into the grocery store yesterday, and I don't know, this made me think of a conversation. I went into the grocery store, and music is playing as I'm shopping, you know, down the aisles and whatnot. And Michael Jackson comes on, right? And I believe it was, not Beat It, what's the other one? Bad comes on.
Smooth Criminal?
Bad.
Okay.
I'm bad, really, really bad. And I'm sitting there like, kind of sing along in my head, and I kind of got into the idea, and this conversation's been had in like the media and whatnot. I don't know if like we've ever really talked about it. Like the ability to separate art from the artist, that whole expression, right? The Michael Jackson songs, but yet there's tens of thousands of allegations against him of doing some really interesting stuff, right? Whether it's with kids, whether it's with, with raising his own kid. There's just a lot of really strange things. The documentary that came out last year or whatever that was. So I posed a question, are you able to, I wanted to ask you, are you able to separate artist work from the artist?
I guess to a degree, but also I would say over time.
Okay.
Like when the accusations were starting to look really legit, and also kind of like when the documentary came out years later, like if a Michael Jackson song came on during these times, I'd be kind of like, I don't think I can get into this and maybe change the channel.
Okay.
But as time goes on, like I would think probably, yeah, like, I mean, he's had at least like 15, not even counting the Jackson 5 days, probably like 15, 20 legit songs where it comes on. You just got to start like snapping your fingers. And
I always say with the Michael Jackson thing, like all the accusations that people had said, he's never been even if one of those dozens and dozens and dozens of accusations is true, it's horrific. Like even if one is true, and I am on the side that I believe he did a lot of what he's accused of. I don't know. His personality just seemed to match that way too much. And there's just stacks of stuff against him. But I wanted to ask you a couple people, like, if you could, like, that are considered like really great artists and that have some checkered past, if you could still listen to their stuff or watch their stuff or appreciate their stuff, or has their reputation kind of completely sullied your image of that, and you can't really get into it. Okay.
Gotcha.
All right, I'm going to start nice and easy. I just wrote a couple down. This is a recent one. I'm not even into her, but a lot of people are into her books and her works and her movies. And that is J.K. Rowling, who is author of Harry Potter. Now, I never got into them, but I know people love them, and I know she's like got this thing with like, apparently she's like not fully supportive of the transgender community. She keeps getting backlash. It seems like every once in a while she keeps getting something. Does your image of her change at all with that?
That's a tough one to say because I think I've seen two of the Harry Potters.
Right.
What were there, like eight movies? Crazy like that. I was never like huge into them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say it's kind of a gray area where I will still respect the work that she did. I mean, this is a story of a woman who was homeless,
yep,
living in a car.
Yep.
And even like as she tried to sell the books and people tried to change it, she pretty much said, no, this is the vision, this is how it's going to go.
Yeah.
She became a billionaire. I think, if I remember an article correctly, she is the only billionaire to go back to a millionaire because she gave away so much money.
Really?
So there's a lot of good things with it. Yeah, I mean, I remember hearing something like that. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that's an absolute truth. Mm-hmm. Go look it up, people, to find out.
No, yeah.
On that one. So there's respect in that, but I totally get the whole, I mean, she is just flinging like a 1970s attitude on like people who are transitioning.
Right.
It's not even like, it's one of those things I've said, like, I can somewhat to a small degree respect somebody saying like, well, I'm very religious. It's in the Bible. Man doesn't lay with man, stuff like that. So I can't condone it.
Mm-hmm.
I can sit back and say, well, I disagree. I admire you, you know, following your faith and right to that degree. And as long as you're not like shoving it in somebody's face, I hate you.
Yeah.
So be it. But she just flat out just like, well, no, guys, you're born with a penis. You're a boy.
Yeah, yeah. I think I think what happens too is like with a lot of these people, why are we looking at these people as like the voice of you know, that they should be the voice of authority or reason? This is a woman who's an author. Why are we asking the wizard lady what she thinks about this, and why does her opinion matter so much? You know what I mean? Like she makes wizard books. That's kind of her thing. You know, if you enjoy them, you like them. Like, I don't look to J.K. Rowling like, I wonder what she thinks about transgender or what she thinks about that. Like, I don't know why we put some people, we forget why they're so popular. She wrote these entertaining, really successful wizard books. Nowhere in her resume does it say like she's a voice on humanities and a voice of. No. So I don't for. As far as the J.K. Rowling one, I could easily separate the art from the artist in that case.
Yeah, I guess I would lean towards that because, again, if I'm watching TV and it pops up, like, again, I'm not a huge Harry Potter fan, but I'm not going to specifically say, oh, that's J.K. Rowling, turn the channel.
Yeah, put it this way. If my kid grows up and he's like, I want to read the Harry Potter books, I'm not going to be like, oh, no. Yeah, you know, like, this week. And, you know, if she thinks that, she thinks that. So, okay, so that was the first. I was starting kind of like we're dipping our toe in the water here. We're gonna kind of build up to up to some more egregious celebrities, if you will. Okay.
So you're saying there's a top of the mountain I can look forward to?
There's some. I mean, you might. I don't know. We might. I just thought it would be an interesting conversation here. Next was world famous comedian, brilliant comedian, Louis C.K. Louis C.K. As you know, he got in trouble for, revealing himself in front of women without permission and, enjoying himself, if you will. Up to that point, Louis C.K. considered top of the mountain, right? I the active comedians, I would say he was on that Mount Rushmore. Like, he was on that that Chappelle, Rock, whatever you want to put the top four. He was right there. Yeah, he was right there. He was releasing specials like a maniac. You know, he was coming out with 2 a year at some point, which is absurd. Can you separate the art from the artist?
This one is easy, 100% yes.
Okay.
I mean, comedy is a level where, like, when it's good, it's good.
Yeah.
And you just, when it just comes out, your body's just going to naturally laugh. So I think I could easily watch a special of his, because you can say he's scum of the earth, ladies. He doesn't respect women in the field for what he did, but
yeah.
Damn, the guy had game and all. I mean, it's hard for me to even look at it. I mean, I guess these things where, like, it doesn't hit me. I don't want to say, like, well, I don't want to respect the people who are spending mad at them, and I don't want to support them. But again, in this situation, I got a good Louis C.K. special.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
Really honest.
I also think, I guess you kind of touched on it, not to minimize the situation of what, I guess it, I don't want to call them, I guess, victims went through, or the people he did this to. But it was also apparently, now whether it's the truth or not, apparently he asked to do these things. Like, he said, I'm going to do this, and they didn't leave. And it's still horrible, of course. But it wasn't to the level of, like, he raped somebody, or he, you know, he did something really awkward and really vile. But he, apparently there was some kind of consent, or maybe, like, there was no, don't do it. So I don't know. I don't know what to believe, but, like, I could also separate Louis C.K. from that. And, like, honestly, some of that behavior doesn't surprise me. If you kind of listen to him, he's kind of, like, almost touched on stuff like that before. So I don't know. I think Louis kind of is who he is, and he kind of always, now maybe he didn't want to go that far, but I think he's always been kind of unapologetic about being kind of gross and being kind of, turned on by weird things. So I don't know, but I'd like to see. I know he put out something. I didn't see it. I didn't see his new one. Not because I am against it, just because I completely forgot about it. So, Louis C.K. Yeah.
I mean, he's always seen me naturally awkward, so I can't be surprised something like this. It's one of those. There are cases of consent. I understand the point of the power and requesting somebody who's a fellow comedian to go through with this, where it's almost like, dude, ew, you wouldn't do that. If you worked at, like, an Arby's, you wouldn't ask a fellow coworker there.
Yeah, and you know he has, like, two daughters, too, and you always like to ask, like, if someone did that to your daughters, you know, like, how would you feel? Like, this, you know, it's pretty terrible, but... All right, so, yeah, Louis, I think I could separate the art from the artist. I think I agree with you, and I think J.K. Rowling I could separate. So let's step it up to what I consider, like, tier two.
Okay,
like, tier two. What about, now, I'm not a, I didn't know this guy's work at all. Okay, I didn't know, but obviously he became a huge headline and still he's the punchline of a lot of jokes now. In fact, when the Bubba Wallace thing happened, everyone was calling him the next Jussie Smollett. Okay, so here's a guy who, you know, faked being mugged by, I guess, white supremacists, if you will, Trumpers, if you will.
Yeah.
I didn't watch a show. I know that show is very well regarded, but how do you feel about him going forward? Can you separate his, if a movie came out and it was like, blah, 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 starring Jussie Smollett, like, could you be like, okay, I'm done with it. I'm okay.
I guess this one's harder, and it's not even on the comparing the earlier things to the, this, I think it's more in the line of, like you said, I didn't watch Empire.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say, well, I can look past what I guess, since I don't really know his past work, if it looks like a movie I'd be interested in, I wouldn't blink an eye. I'd probably, like everybody else, have a couple jokes saying, I'm going to the Jesse Smollett movie. Hope I don't get beat up by a skinhead.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy that's able to use, like, if he gets the right people around him to use it as a joke. Like, I messed up and I can admit my mistake. And, you know, like the Tekashi 6ix9ine guy. He's, like, rapping about being a snitch now. I feel like with the right people around him and the right amount of time, he can kind of maybe get past that. I think he could.
Yeah, I mean, nothing that I heard from, like, people who watch Empire where, like, oh, he was a difference maker. So, like, unless he ups his game, there's nothing where I can see where he's going to be in a big enough movie where it's like, okay, now I got to decide. But, I mean, if, like, he's in, if somebody says you can't go see this movie because he has a supporting role, it'd be like, what do I care?
Okay. Right. So now we're going to step it up a notch. He was in my tier two. He was my only tier two member. Slightly tier two, just because I feel like this guy is, he never got blackballed by what he did. Okay. I really feel like he just kind of skated on this somehow, and I have no idea. Chris Brown, the rapper dancer guy, he like beat Rihanna. He like publicly is known for beating her. And I feel like everyone was like,
what can he do?
He can do the jitterbug. He could dance really well, though. He could dance really well. Like, to me, I can't separate that. Like, the wife beating, woman beating, like, I think that I can't look at this guy and be like, oh, look how great he dances. His song's so catchy. Like, I can't do it.
Yeah, I gotta agree. There's nothing about him where I would sit back and say, I want to crave it, or I can't fathom a scenario where he put out something where somebody's like, oh my God, this is so amazing, where I wouldn't change my mind.
Yeah.
Something like that.
This guy was easy for me. You know, as I was thinking through these, I'm like, some of them I do find tough. Like, I think that Louis's tough for me. Michael Jackson's tough for me. That's kind of how this led into it, because some of his songs are just goddamn great. That's what it comes down to. You sing along to them. You like them. You know, people sing along to them. You put them on at a party. Everyone's like, ABC. Like, it's just automatic, you know?
Yeah, we just talked to Alien Ant Farm where we couldn't stop talking about Smooth Criminal.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. So I guess the next tier, I don't know. Now I've lost count of tiers, so I guess tier three. I'm going to go with Kevin Spacey. Okay, here's a guy who I thought one of the best actors going. Mm-hmm. Okay, I loved American Beauty. I loved Kaiser Sose. I never watched Blacklist, but I heard he's unbelievable in it. For me, this was a tough one. So I'd like to hear your thoughts.
I think I'm going to lean towards I can't separate it. And the reason for that is I think I can't separate it. Not even, I mean, the acts are, you know, not that great. And I'll talk about touching actors, little boys before they were of age. But just I think what is like the cherry on the cupcake was kind of like when he went away and then he did that weird
video
where he's in character. Where you're almost like, what are you doing? Touched boys, and now you're trying to win us back with a YouTube video and character?
Yeah, it's like a weird disconnect, right? Like a weird, I don't get what I did or what I'm under, what I'm being accused of. Like, I don't get it, you know?
It was just so odd, and like, you figure his like lawyer would be on the phone with him like, no, do not make this video.
Yeah.
We got enough problems.
See, this is I'm weird with this now because I really loved American Beauty and I really loved Usual Suspects. Like, I really like those two movies a lot. And I feel like I still can watch them. Now, I don't know if I could sit there. because like American Beauty, right? There's some weird undertones in that movie, right? There's some weird. Mm-hmm. He's kind of attracted to the really young girl and starts to dream about her, and you know, with the what's her name? What was her name? That blonde girl with the rose. Remember the scene with the rose petals and all that? Whatever.
Obviously, yeah.
You know, he's thinking about what was this, his daughter's friend?
Yeah.
So you start to think about that, and you're like, you know, was he, you know, if you substituted a young boy, all of a sudden that thing becomes a whole, I don't know. It kind of goes with his, you know, his creepy past and whatnot. So I don't know if I can sit there and watch it anymore, but I do remember loving those two movies a lot. So I'm going to say that I could still watch those movies, but I could never go ahead and be like, Kevin Spacey's got a new project coming out. I could watch it.
I guess the caveat is I could watch the movies to enjoy the movies, but I'm sure as I'm watching the movies, every time it would show him, I'm sure in the back of my head I'd be like, yeah, you're scum.
Yeah, Usual Suspects is a tough one to lose, though. That's a tough one to bury. That's a great movie.
Well, there's so many great actors.
Yeah.
I can concentrate on other scenes.
There's a good other question. Like, yeah, like if there's enough other guys in the movie, can we just bury the Spacey part for a little bit?
Yeah, like that might help Smollett because, like I said, he was a lead actor. He's not Kevin Spacey area. Yeah. So he would probably be like the sixth guy in like an Untouchables kind of gang. You know what I mean? Where it's like, yeah, well, I'm barely going to see you, so I'm barely going to care, but... Okay. Yeah, I gotta say, I don't think I could separate. I think as much as I'll enjoy the movies, every time it'll come up, I'll cringe.
Yeah. Okay. Coming to a tier, I put these two guys together because they kind of, I don't know, they kind of remind me of each other and they have similar jobs. The next tier, Mike, Woody Allen and Roman Polanski. Yeah.
Like Allen, that's an easy one. No, because one, I didn't like. He's made some good movies.
I'm not a big Woody Allen guy either.
A huge fan of his work, so right, there's no way I could just go out of my way to kind of support his kind of stuff. I'll put him there. Huh. Polanski's in that weird area. It's like you know the answer has to be you can't separate him.
Yeah, I know.
Damn it!
I know. This is why. So when I'm going through this list, I'm going through like, and then I'm sitting there like a, I don't know, like a big jerk kind of like being like, what's worse? You know, like putting them in order in my head. Like, let's see what tier three is. But I don't know. Polanski, I don't know. I feel like his work is kind of so not, I don't know. This is going to sound weird, but his work is so, I don't find it like as creepy as him, but he's got a lot of skeletons in the closet, man. I don't know if he could I don't think he could ever put out anything ever again and be well received.
No,
I think
people in Hollywood blackballed him. There's zero possibility, and even if he put something out, it would be such an like $5 movie theater that nobody goes to.
I think he skated underneath for way longer than he was even allowed to. Like, that should have made sense. Like, people knew a lot about him, and he was still up there, like, receiving awards. Like he made The Pianist and,
Let's see, The Tenant, Chinatown.
Oh, yeah, Chinatown, yeah. Exactly, that's like a, you know, people love that movie. Didn't he make, Rosemary's Baby, too?
I think that's his. Let me just scroll up. Yep, what did he do on it? He was the director and writer of Rosemary's Baby.
Okay,
which
so
is like one of the best horror movies of all time.
Exactly. Dark, scary. But it makes you wonder, like, these guys so screwed up that they're able to come up with this, or can normal average dudes come up with these kind of things? I don't know. I think I'm going to have to go... I could separate it now because there's no movie that I sit there and watch all the time. I'm like, oh, I'm a big Polanski guy, but
yeah, kind of add to it. He's not in these films. He's not like Stephen King who has to do like a cameo.
Yeah. That's a tough one, right?
Yeah. It's, I, I don't want to say anything but no, but there's still a part of me. It's like, well, we got to figure this out. You know what I mean? It's,
I know.
Dirty. I'm going to lean towards no, but you'll probably catch me one day and go, aha.
One day you're going to come on the podcast. So I was watching Rosemary's Baby, and what a movie. All right. Mike, I picked this one out for you. So I got two more. Three more. Okay. And we'll go through them quick so we can get to our guest. I picked this one out for you and for me in particular because this is when I still watched. This is totally different. This is in a different category. Chris Benoit. Here's a guy. Here's a guy. He was he was my favorite wrestler at the time. He was unbelievable.
Technical wrestling, there hasn't been a person before or after in his ballpark. It was literally the wrestling machine.
Yeah.
If he only had like an ounce of mic work, he would be probably as huge as a rock right now.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Now, let me preface this. This was the time period where my middle school, early high school, where I still watch wrestling, and me and my friend, like, he was the guy for me. I'm like, that guy's really good and amazing. And then I kind of fizzled out. So I fizzled out before, you know, murdered his whole family.
Yeah.
So I didn't, I remember hearing about this and being, oh my God, no way. Like, I still, like, but my question is, could you still go, like, look up one of his classic matches and watch it and not be able to be, again, being able to separate the wrestler from the murderer.
Yeah, I will preference. I still was watching wrestling when this incident occurred, and there is nothing more awkward than the Monday Night Raw after the pay-per-view.
Oh, didn't they celebrate him, right?
They had a whole night celebrating him.
Yeah.
And then basically they still were running ECW shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I came on Tuesdays, and they basically, it was Vince McMahon who came out and said, like, we learn new things. All we can do is say we're sorry and stop mentioning him ever again.
Yeah, for Jesus Christ.
Lack of a better term.
So what do you think?
Could I watch one of his matches? I think I could watch a match of his. I mean, he was just a physical specimen with what he could do in the ring, and he was a hell of a worker, and his work was incredible. Like I said, the only thing that kept him from being a mainstream everybody on earth knew about it would be he was not the greatest mic guy.
See, but that's funny, right? Like, you could watch a match, right, because you enjoy wrestling, but then, like, we can say the same thing. Because we're all kind of like hypocrites in this, right? Like, we could say the same thing about Kevin Spacey. Like, we could say, I can go back and watch Usual Suspects. He's an amazing worker. He's an amazing actor. You know?
Yeah.
That's why I thought this was like an interesting point, you know, an interesting topic.
It's always gray area. I mean, I feel since like I can, it's hard to explain. Yeah. I feel I could probably watch it. I would say as much as I say I would watch a match, I don't – all the time I've been on YouTube and seen, like, classic matches, I don't think I've ever gone back and watched a Benoit. Oddly, I feel I can watch it. But, again, I think it's just one of those at the end, I'm going to feel so dirty at the end celebrating the guy. I mean, I think Paul Heyman put it best. Like, he was doing, like, in the – like an off interview show, like a podcast or whatever, with like an audience. And he was talking about, he was supposed to be Chris Benoit's manager at one of the WrestleManias before they turned around and put him with Brock. And he brought up Benoit, and some guy in the audience screamed, my man. And like Heyman pretty much said, no, mm-hmm. no. One of the best wrestlers of all time. He said when he had ECW, he planned on him being the first ECW champion before he went to WCW. One of the greatest athletes of all time. But as he put it best, three people died that night.
Yeah.
Two people didn't have the option. And that, in the end, is what I had to lean on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. I agree too. I agree. It's that one's a tough one. And then I guess the final tier, Berlo. The final tier for me, which I thought these two guys kind of matched, Bill Cosby and R.
Kelly. I knew he was coming.
And R. Kelly.
Let's see.
R. Kelly for me is a little easier because, like,
yeah,
never a big fan, so it's easy. But I understand people were ginormous fans. But watching that documentary, and he was an animal. Yeah. He's a terrible, terrible person. He's the worst. So for me, not hard to separate the art from ours. I can never hear an R. Kelly song again. I'll be perfectly fine.
I will say he was musically talented, R. Kelly. Not a huge fan, but I could listen to a couple songs. But any desire to listen to one now? No.
Anyway, I agree. I thought that would be the answer. Bill Cosby is probably one of the toughest ones. So we're talking...
Comedy is always hard.
But we're talking comedy, we're also talking The Cosby Show.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So we're talking
that
classic...
That was in my age range. I grew up watching The Cosby Show up until...
we're talking classic sitcom and at least like four classic specials. Like comedy specials.
Yep. I think I could to a degree. I don't think I could watch like a marathon of it, but there are some classic shows
right
from The Cosby Show, and he had like four shows or something like that. He had the original one. He had the Cosby Mysteries. He had the Cosby Show that was just Cosby that was on CBS.
And then also like Fat Albert too was him.
Fat Albert. Yep. That's a tough one. Like
Mike's like no
than anything else. if I just came downstairs and the TV magically turned on and it was Fat Albert, I don't think I would even like question why it did it. I think I would just be watching it.
So I know
like
I'm presenting
more of my childhood than The Cosby Show.
I know I'm presenting this question to you on a fly, you know, like I'm giving to you. So I thought about this. So I'll give my opinion. Then maybe you can take the time to think about yours.
So I think the best way to answer this, since you gave tears, is I'm going to answer this on tears. I can separate the Fat Albert because that was just that's childhood.
So you could trim the fat.
Oh god.
See what you did there. Oh god.
Drop the mic, Scott.
Oh god.
Yeah, so tier one, Fat Albert, I'll watch it all the time. Tier two, The Cosby Show, I could probably watch an episode or two, but with the back of my head still kind of like, ooh. Tier three, I'm going to put, though his routines were classic, those are the ones I may lay off on because his early stuff, he put some like questionable stuff out there too. I know he tried to like turn things around and like he got mad at Eddie Murphy, but like there's some of them. Yeah. He mentions like women and all that. And she comes in with the perfume. I think there was even a famous Cosby Show where he talked about the special sauce and all his daughters were getting horny, and he's like, "It's the sauce, something I put in the sauce."
So
just to women.
So for me, Fat Albert, you know, I viewed it here and there, so it wasn't like it didn't hold a place in my heart. So it's okay for me. Cosby Show was on a lot. I'm okay with letting that go. I could still watch his stand-up a little bit, especially the earlier ones, like a master of clean comedy. Like, you know, like it's a master of clean comedy. And it's like, you know, like my act is not dirty, but it's not as clean as I want it to be. And like being clean and funny, it to me is very hard to do, you know? And like he was able to master like life scenarios and stuff like that. And I don't know. My goal is to get to like a point where I'm able to do that. So I think I could watch some of them just with the haunting thought in the back of my mind. Like, wow, this guy is a fraud. He's a fraud. That's what it comes down to. He's a giant fraud. All the family values crap, he's a fraud. You know, he's a disgusting man, but I don't know.
Who's the guy who outed him? Hannibal?
Hannibal Burris, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the funny thing, like, people were trying to blackball Hannibal when he was, like, coming out with those jokes.
He's like, what? You know it's true?
Yeah. That's the sad thing. He's like, well, you can blackball me, but he's a rapist.
Yep. Also, Hannibal's hilarious. So, all right. So that's separate. I don't even know if that's the name of a bit, but separating the art from the artist, man.
Well, can we throw one in there?
All right. Give me one. Give me one.
O.J. Simpson. Because as much as we like,
granted,
none of his movies were amazing.
He was funny and naked.
He's
gun,
got
though.
Like 2 million people on Twitter, and we all know what we believe. Some of them are on the, oh yeah, we found him innocent, but
yeah,
there's a lot more of us kind of on this side. It's like,
Here's the thing with followers though. Followers, it doesn't mean like I follow a lot of people. I can't stand, but they're just so outrageous. I kind of want to like see what they do. You know what I mean? Like, so I think, so he's got 2 million followers. I'll cut that in half and say 1 million of them.
You like what he did?
Ba-boom, ba-ba-ba-ba.
Back at you.
I'll say that right now, 1 million are just following him to see what the hell OJ says the next day. You know, like, what the hell is it? Like, it's like a horror show. It's a car accident. You're gonna look. You don't want to look, but you're gonna stare at it. OJ, I could separate. I could separate it for him.
I think I could separate it for the Naked Gun movies because those were all three of them I loved.
Yeah. I could separate it. Like, yeah, whatever. He's just playing like funny OJ. I don't know. I also think like, I don't know. Maybe I'll get crap for this, but like I think people turn at different points of their life. Like I don't, maybe he wasn't like the OJ, the murderous OJ he was in the Naked Gun era or the football playing era, and maybe crap rolled downhill for him, and his anger took over, and maybe his CTE took over from football, and he just turned into this absolute maniac. I don't know. I could separate it though. I could. So, can you? You could separate, right?
I mean, the Naked Gun movies, yeah. I think I forgot.
But OJ the author, OJ the author. If I did it, I can't.
Something just reminds me of that time.
All right. Well, that was a cool conversation. But all right, Mike, it is. It's time to shift gears here and get to another amazing guest here on the podcast, and I think our guest has a lot to do with your karaoke song of choice, actually.
Yeah, that's how things go on this podcast. Just bringing up just a random topic where you turn around and like, you know what, let me go see if I can find somebody, and that's exactly what happened. Tonight we speak with musician and actor Brian Vander Ark. Brian is the lead singer of the Vertpipe, who had the huge hit song The Freshman in 1997. He was also in the 2001 rock star movie starring Mark Wahlberg and Jennifer Aniston. So we're going to chat with him on what he's up to and what's it like to get those big hits back in the 90s and on the alternative grunge days.
All right, so let's get Brian Vander Ark on the line.
I can hear you, Scotty.
And Brian, you can hear Mike?
I can. Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Doing fine. How about yourself, Brian?
Doing very well. Thanks for doing this for me.
Ah, it's our pleasure. Our pleasure. Where are we calling you from?
I'm in Michigan, Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Oh, okay. How's things in the scene over there? Things, you know, calm down in any way, or still the usual roller coaster?
We've got a liberal mayor, so everything's still closed, which is good as far as I'm concerned. But everything's fine, you know. I mean, we've found this time to be a good time to hunker down and be creative and not go anywhere. So that's good by me.
Yeah,
I hear that.
Are you the type of guy who's able to kind of stay creative during a downtime, or do you find like a writer's block type situation?
No, I was kind of forced into this. You know, I mean, I was doing all the business stuff for so long, and then all of a sudden this happened and all the gigs got canceled, and I was like, well, maybe it's time to get creative. And it Took a little bit to get the juices flowing, but once they started flowing, it's been pretty good.
So let's kind of start from the beginning, Brian. And so for what I see, the Verb Pipe started around like 1992. What was it like joining that? You were in a band called Johnny with an I. Kind of talk us through how you went from there over to the band Verb Pipe.
Yeah, well, Water for the Pool was a band that was very popular, right, in, 1990, 1991. And I was in a band called Johnny with an I. And Water for the Pool had all of these great gigs on the weekends and made all the money. And my band, Johnny with an I, played all the 25-cent draft beer nights on Tuesday nights kind of thing until we got a big following. You know?
Yeah.
And we got this big following because everybody in college goes out on the cheap beer nights, right? So then I approached a couple members of that band and I said, hey, what do you say we break up our bands and we record these songs that I've been working on? And a couple of the guys agreed and we did that. Kind of formed a super group for a local, however the
super local group
status
yeah.
could be. Yeah, yeah. Michigan. And then we formed the Verb Pipe and we went into the studio. We borrowed $5,000 and recorded an independent album. We sold about 15,000 copies, and then we took some of that money and recorded another album, and we sold about 20,000 copies of that. So the band had been together for about a year, and we were already making upwards of $200,000 or $300,000, and that's when RCA got wind of it, signed us to a 4-album deal.
That's awesome. Growing up, were you like a classically trained kind of musician? Were you a guy that just picked up a guitar and made some noise in the garage? What was your?
We had a couple guys in the band that were classically trained. You know, guys that are the musoids, guys that read all the notes and the whole thing. know when something mathematically in music is not supposed to sound right, but don't really listen to what sounds good. You know. But my ear was always just what sounds good. So no, I don't read notation or anything like that. I pick up really and go with my influences, the people I grew up listening to, and try to emulate them in some way, lyrically and musically.
Yeah, I mean, from listening to some of your interviews and the story about like the grind you guys were doing with like selling CDs from your van, going to event, this one was crazy. And now, was it Villains, the album where you wrote all the songs by staying in a storage bin for 10 days?
Yeah, my girlfriend at the time. Well, what bands used to do, let me preface it with this. This was very popular in the 90s in Michigan. You'd rent out a storage unit for about $100 a month. And you'd make sure that your storage unit had power, because you were not only going to store your gear there, you were going to plug in and play and rehearse and record demos and that kind of thing. So there was a storage unit facility in Lansing, Michigan that had about 20 or 30 bands that would throw up their garage doors in the spring, summer, fall months, and it would play. They would practice, and you could walk through there and listen to a jazz band, rehearsing, or a rock band rehearsing, and that kind of, there was this great cacophony of different bands playing, a lot of music going on all the time. And so my girlfriend, at the time, for what could have been a number of very good reasons, kicked me out of our apartment. And I was like, I'll show her, for $100 a month, I'm going to live in the storage unit. So I moved into the storage unit. And I lived there for 4 months, and I wrote Villains, which was the RCA debut, the major label debut. So I wrote most of those songs there.
So when do you release the follow-up where you go back into the storage unit? Is there like a...
Oh, my God, no. Well, the follow-up records, we're at that point, we've sold 1.5 million records.
Yeah.
And we're hanging out with celebrities. I mean, are you going to go back into a storage unit?
Yeah, right now.
I wasn't going to do it. I was like, no, let us go and record in New York and taking the vibe of the city and that kind of thing. And RCA was like, okay, it's going to be about $400,000. And we were like, no problem, because we had so many fans. We thought, well, those fans would go right out and buy the next album. And so we spent $4,000, $5,000 a day writing and recording in New York, and then nobody bought that album.
Yeah.
So it was a huge debacle, man. I mean, we couldn't do anything with that album.
God.
Yeah, I kind of want to get into that because I heard that story too, but let's take a step back to Villains and all. Now, I'm kind of curious. Now, The Freshman, obviously your guys' big hit, it was a big hit in 97, but you made the song in 92, if I read it correctly. I'm just kind of curious, and when you have a song that's been in your arsenal for that long, you put it on your album, is there any sign you say, all right, that's just a nice, cute little song that I'd like to add on to it, or was there any thoughts of, no, this is where it's going to hit?
I felt like when I first wrote the song, I had no idea, you know, the impact it would have. And I remember playing the song for the first time in Kalamazoo, Michigan at the small club. And I messed up all the lyrics because I wasn't prepared to play it yet. You know, I just finished it and I messed up all the verses. But I had the pre-chorus, which was, you know, can't be held responsible. She was touching her face and that whole thing. And after I got done, people came up and said, oh my God, what was that song about her touching her face? And I was like, oh, there's something here, right? So then I, you know, really learned the song and played it. And that was one of the songs when RCA finally came out. Actually, it came out the second time and saw a club, an entire club sing every lyric. Then they knew that there was something there. So we were pretty confident in 94, 95 that this could be a hit. We would just have to re-record it in a more, you know, in a heavier way. You know, the early version was acoustic, mm-hmm. and they convinced us, listen, go in, you know, distort the guitars up a bit. Let's get a heavy guitar riff and that kind of thing and make it very modern rock. And so that's what we did. So yeah, the song had already existed for 5 years. It was a pretty big hit on the college circuit before, you know, back in 92. So, and then when radio finally embraced it in 96, the new version, then it of course blew up and it was a huge thing. And by then, of course, I was way sick of it already.
Yeah. How do you look at that song now? Are you still sick of it, or does it kind of come full circle where you begin to appreciate it again?
I mean, honestly, I have to say there's a moment where I was really sick of it and didn't want to play it, but I played it because I had to play it, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then over the years, as I get older, I go, you know, I've been to so many shows, and when I see a band play, they play a song that I know from the 90s or the early 2000s, and I, you know, even though I know the song from front to back, I still enjoy singing along, and I still enjoy the nostalgia of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a songwriter who's written one of those songs, I can say that it's actually a moment in the set where I know that I'm going to please people who want to go back to that time. And that is that there's value in that.
For sure.
And there's also value in the fact that I feel like it's a quality song. I feel like it's not, you know, I didn't write I'm Too Sexy or something stupid that I would have had to, you know, play over and over. I feel pretty good about, you know, the legacy. And so, you know, overall, I think that, yeah, you know, I'm kind of tired of playing it, but yeah, I know it's a moment in the set that it's going to mean something to people. And that's, you know, that's important to me, especially when people get babysitters now and go to shows and it's a whole hassle. Well, I don't know what COVID, what kind of hassle it's going to be. I know it's going to be a huge hassle, but back then, even a year ago, you know, I know that it's a moment that these couples have come, they now have, you know, kids and disposable income, and they're coming, they're getting a babysitter, they're coming to the show. I know that's a moment that they're going to love. And there's so much value in that, that I have to dismiss any kind of, like, you know, boredom I have with the song.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Now you, it comes to, you know, we're in 2020. Is it pretty amazing to think that you still, you know, you guys are still making music, you're still out there, you still have fans and whatnot. Is it hard to believe it's been as long as it is already?
I mean, how do you compare it with anything else?
No.
I mean, if you get any kind of regular job, usually you just work your way up the ladder. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And by the time you reach my age of 50, well, I'm 56, just turned 56. So you reach this age, you're like, all right, well, you know, I'm at this point in my career. I've got two more steps to make it till I'm vice president or whatever. You know? Then they're going to give me the gold watch and give me the golden parachute, hopefully, and kick me off. I'm at that point now. I'm thankful that I've been able to just play music since I quit my job at the sporting goods store, you know, in 1991.
Yeah.
I used to string tennis rackets, and I was able to quit that job to be able to just play music, and I haven't looked back since then. And I'm very, very fortunate. And,
for sure.
You know, I get a nice house, and my family, you know, my kids go to a nice school. And, yeah, so I mean, I'm very fortunate. So, you know, it's a little surreal that, you know, thinking years ago, I'm just a kid from Michigan. What do I know? And how can I possibly make it in the music industry to actually have made it and be able to continue and perpetuate a life in music and make new albums and have the money to do that, you know, independently without a record label breathing down my neck? It's a pretty good feeling. For sure.
It's got to be, for sure.
Now, I kind of want to step back to what you talked about with the second album. So the second album, The Verb Pipe, I, for what I saw, I watched a video of you explaining what happened on Failure Lab, Grand Rapids. So I just want to see if I got everything straight here.
Yeah.
You had a militant record producer who put a TP in the record studio, who made you sing every song at least 100 times.
Yeah.
It was double the budget and almost triple the time. The album flopped, and thanks to that, you couldn't go on SNL. And if you want to sell the album now, you have to actually buy it on eBay to resell it.
I just bought four of those albums on eBay.
Really?
To resell them. Well, here's what you do. This is so ridiculous because RCA stopped producing them, or BMG, because, you know, they don't sell. They're not going to put them in stores. And well, actually, what stores are you going to put them in? So, you know, we can't get them from, you know, BMG because they stopped manufacturing them. So I go on eBay and I buy them, and I get the guys to sign them, and we all sign them. You know, we buy them for $3 a piece, and we sell them for 10 bucks, you know, 15 bucks. I mean, you want to, like, I want to satisfy the people that actually like that album or are curious about those songs, because that album ended up being our Pinkerton, you know, the album that nobody liked at the time. But in the end, you know, over time, people dig the album. So I got all these requests for this album, and I have to wait and tell people we have to wait until somebody sells it before we can actually get it to you.
That's, you know, that's,
but I mean,
crazy.
That's the nature of the beast. When you make an album, a sophomore record, you have an enormous ego. You think that, you know, at least, you know, 10% of the 1.5 million people are going to go out there and buy that record. And then instead of 70,000 people in the first week, you sell 7,000 records.
Yeah.
And it's a huge failure. Then, you know, you have to, like, reassess, you know, what you can do with this music that you work so hard. These songs are your babies, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I love these songs. And yet, you know, they're in an album that nobody bought. Nobody knows these songs. I mean, a handful of people.
Now, I got to ask you about an album in 2016 with Jeff Daniels. Like, I thought I read this wrong on, you know, I was going through doing some research on the interview, and I was like, he did an album with Jeff Daniels? Like, first off, one, how did that even come about? Two, like, what, I didn't get a chance to actually listen to that. What would fans expect to even hear on that?
Well, you know, Jeff, not many people know Jeff is a musician. Mm-hmm. You know, he's an actor, of course. Everybody knows him for that. He's from Michigan, so I've known him for years.
Okay.
And he's this kind of 70s songwriter type of guy when he does his music and he doesn't do the acting. And we come from that, we're cut from the same cloth in that way. Like, I grew up in the Harry Chapins and James Taylors and the Cat Stevens, you know, and the whole thing like he did. And I did a movie, a friend of mine recorded a movie, filmed a movie of my lawn chairs and living rooms tour, which is a tour I started in 2008, where I went into the homes of my fans and just, you know, and I did like three shows a day going from one fan's house to another one. And he saw this film and he called me up and he said, hey, you know, we should write together. And I said, oh, let's do something together. And so we started writing together, and we wrote a couple of songs. And then, years later, we decided to make an album together, and we made an album together, you know. And it's, for anybody that's interested, it's more acoustic. It's more of the 70s songwriter type of songs. And on occasion, we'll play together. And, you know, when he's not, you know, doing the acting thing, and that's a pretty cool thing. You know,
yeah,
it's
sure.
One of those things where you can, little things where it's like, you know, it's like candy in life. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the extra thing that I can do and have fun with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's incredible. Now, along with your music, you also done some acting yourself. You were in that rock star with Mark Wahlberg and Jennifer Aniston. Did you always have like a side gig that you want to be an actor, or did somebody like pull you aside and said, oh, you'd be great for a movie?
Nah, I had a friend who, somebody I'd met in the early 90s who was a filmmaker, an aspiring filmmaker, and he said he wrote a film and asked me to be in it, and then I did another one with him and another one. And I was kind of that, what's that guy's name that was in all the Gary Marshall, but Hector Elizondo? Whatever his name is. Anyway, I was kind of that guy for him. I'd be in all of his movies and little cameos and whatever. And then I heard about this movie that was coming out called Metal God, which was a take on the Judas Priest song and the, you know, their story where, you know, was it Ripper Owens, I think his name was? Yeah, who they went to,
yeah,
they went and found this guy to, you know, take over Rob Halford's place. So, you know, I read the script, and they said, we need a Seattle-esque type of ballad. And so I wrote a song for it. And then I sent the song off, and then they asked me an audition, and I auditioned. And then I didn't hear anything for like 2 months. And then on my doorstep in Grand Rapids, Michigan, I get the script. Right. And it's a script for a movie called Rockstar, which I'd never even like, what is this, you know? And I look at it and I'm reading through it. I'm going, this sounds familiar. And I look in the back and they printed the lyrics to the song I wrote. And I call my manager and I'm like, they totally stole my song. And he's like, hold on, let me find out what's going on. So he called the producers, and sure enough, it was Metal God turned into Rockstar. And they used the song. They printed the song lyrics, and then they wanted me to be in the movie as well. And nobody took the time to tell me. So I went out and flew out there a few weeks later and made Rockstar. And I mean, honestly, Colorful ended up being, Colorful was a song in the end of the movie. You know, Mark Wahlberg sings the song to Jennifer Aniston. He lip syncs to my voice, which is pretty weird. But until the check started coming in, then everything was fine.
Yeah, right.
but the fact is that, you know, that particular moment in the movie was such a big moment that song has become our biggest hit, you know, besides The Freshman. I mean, that is right up there over the years, because there are so many places that play that song. You know, TBS plays it, and VH1 plays it, and it's on so much that we're so fortunate that I was actually a part of that. So Colorful ended up being a pretty good thing.
Absolutely. How many people over your career have asked you to play a Bittersweet Symphony before?
It happens every day.
I have to imagine.
This is so frustrating, because first of all, I really love The Verve.
Yeah,
I think Richard Ashcroft is a great, great songwriter. That's a great band.
Right.
And in 1992, when the band formed, and our first album, you know, that album I said, you know, cost us $5,000. When we were first, you know, going to send that album to the manufacturer, we had to come up with a name. And our guitarist said, we're going to be called the Verve Pipe. This is after, you know, this is like 3 a.m. after copious amounts of alcohol.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, no big deal. And then, you know, it was like a few weeks later, after we had sent the artwork in for the CD to be manufactured, we see this article about this band called the Verve in England. And we're like, oh my God, what? And then we have this band discussion, and we're like, you know, what are the chances that a band from England are going to make it and we're going to make it? We're just going to stick with our guns. And you know what? Our singles, as you probably know, were like months apart from being number one songs. It was ridiculous. And so to this day, like, well, yeah, not today, but yesterday, I swear to God, I had somebody tag us with Bittersweet Symphony again. It happens all the time. It doesn't bother me because I'm sure that the Verve got the worst of it, because the Verve is going to get all of the sorority girls that are going to be like, oh my God, I love the freshmen. I'm sure those guys are just like, oh my God, what a piece of shit.
See, I would have just, like, gone into it, because, like, with what they had with the Rolling Stones, I'd make up, like, this whole story. Yeah, man, Mick Jagger came to my house. He had a gun on it. We had to get into a fist fight. It was terrible. He was saying, I beat him up, and I signed off to say, I give him all the money. That's all I can tell you about it, okay?
I love that, yeah. I love that. Actually, you know, the fact that, you know, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards actually gave them the money after all these years. I mean, I thought to myself, how funny would it be if they accidentally gave me all that money? And would I have the character to say anything?
So how does the Verve Pipe stay together, like, going into, you know, 2020, this next decade? What is, like, what's the key to you guys, you know, staying, liking each other, one, and two, being able to make music?
I think the important thing is that when you have a song that's become synonymous with the 90s, which I think the Freshman was, which we're fortunate it was. Like, if you think about the playlist back then and what was going on, mm-hmm. and the Freshman comes up, and you can hold your head high that it's a quality song, you know, it's got a decent lyric and a good melody, and it's, you know, and it brings people back to that place. I think you have to have a sense of humor about it too, and say, look, we haven't written anything that's been as, dare I say, iconic in that way.
Yeah.
Just go out now and make the music you want to make, and let's have fun together, and let's play like we used to play in the old days in the small clubs, because, you know, let's frankly, we're not playing arenas now, you know, we're back in the small clubs.
Yep.
And we had a blast back then, and we have a blast now. We just have a lot of fun. We make sure the show is entertaining, and we have fun with it. And it's hard to say these things without thinking about what the future brings with the COVID situation and social distancing, and what our concert venue is going to look like.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can tell you this, I don't care we've never cared if there's 10 people in the audience or 10,000 people in the audience. We put on the same fucking show every time. It's always a great show. And that's what matters, because if I can walk away from a show and say, you know what? Every single person there was on the edge of their seats or was up and enjoying it and fist pumping, then my life is grand. The fact that I can do this, you know, and still make it happen. And we all have the same attitude now. So we keep making music, and, you know, we'll occasionally play new songs at the shows, and we hope people have a great time. That's all that matters.
That's absolutely great to hear. You're songwriter, you're a musician, like I said, you've done a little side acting. Is there any other art forms out there you've been interested in, maybe dabbling in, or that you do that people may not be aware that you do?
You know, I do some public speaking. That's not really an art form. That's really a pay the bills form. You know, so I go into corporate functions and tell them the story of reinvention, and how we were on the top and then the bottom, and how I could, you know, get back to the top again and make a living and that kind of thing. And, you know, I've been working on a book as well, and trying to write a book that's interesting, written in an interesting way, and not in the way that, you know, any other, you know, what people would consider a one-hit wonder would write, you know, try to get behind what the Freshman was about and how I wrote it and where things are now. So, other than that, artistically, no, it's all about the music, the writing. That's it.
And is there before we let you go, is there anything on the horizon for the Verve Pipe or yourself or any music coming out or anything that fans should be looking forward to?
I mean, we've been looking forward to a new album for, you know, 3 months now, and mm-hmm. the entire thing's written. And as soon as we can get back into the studio here in probably the next month or two, the whole thing will be recorded within the next 6 months. And then we'll be back on the road and putting these songs out there and hoping people come out to join us.
Awesome.
Absolutely. Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. If people want to get a hold of you and look at your projects or the band, where should they go to?
Definitely go to patreon.com/Brian Vanderark. You'll find all the archive stuff. That's my Patreon page. It's got a lot of like the extra, the bonus stuff, and you know, a little is $3 a month. You can join. And other than that, the Verve Pipe on Facebook and the Verve Pipe on Twitter, you can find us there as well.
That's awesome. And one more question before you go. When I was looking up stuff, I came across that movie Dead and Breakfast. Out of curiosity,
I love that
out
movie.
Of curiosity, there is a song in there, like it's like a southern rap of "We're going to kill you" that the zombies do. Were you in any way involved in that? Because it is
coming to get you. Coming to get you. Coming to get you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. Yeah, that was the filmmaker I talked about earlier, my buddy who makes movies. That was the first movie we did together. And that's a super fun movie. If you get the chance to see it, I highly recommend it to your listeners. Dead and Breakfast, a lot of fun, very funny, good music. My buddy actually wrote that. And do I have any songs? I think there's a hint of The Freshman in there, but that's about it. But it's a really fun movie. Thanks for bringing up Dead and Breakfast, by the way.
Oh, no problem, no problem. I do my research for this show, you know?
Brian, thanks so much for the time, and stay safe out there. We really appreciate talking to you for a little bit.
Hey, guys, a lot of fun to talk to you. Thanks, man.
All right, brother, what do you got?
A little thing here. I'm not going to name this person. This
KP Burke.
Person... No.
Oh, damn.
No. We love the American Loser
No,
podcast,
we don't. We
but
hate
I
them.
Digress.
They're terrible. Terrible people. Yeah. Larry's cool. KP's right. Not.
Oh, that is true. You got a valid point. Yeah. So, when going out and trying to get gas, I oddly, weirdly got a little upset with this person.
You know what? Hold on. I'm starting to realize you have a lot of interesting interactions, man. You're being asked to swing. Bigfoot people hate you.
Only one. Only certain ones. Not all of them.
That's right. You're one of the only guys I know that has had multiple interactions with Bigfoot people. Like you are a linchpin in the Bigfoot community.
Yeah. Well, I've had all tiers. We've had a good guest. Who was a big
yeah,
person.
Cliff was great.
Cliff was great. Then we had the potential guest who basically chewed me out thinking I was making fun of lost children.
Yes.
And then there was the third guy who's basically looking into my Facebook profile to look at my pictures of my wife and pretty much says, I'm going up to Tennessee to find this Bigfoot.
Maybe the Bigfoot guy is the same guy as the swinger.
Damn you, Lou. Damn you.
All right, go ahead.
So we had a potential guest coming on the show, and maybe we'll reschedule him one day. Who knows? But this oddly weirded me out. So we had him scheduled.
Right.
And it was one of them nights where they said everything was good. Night came, we tried to contact them, couldn't get a hold of them.
Oh, like the shark, like the shark attack survivor that I had from Australia?
No, that's your own private
enemy.
Yeah,
he hated me.
There.
He hated me.
But he kind of ghosted us for a while, and then I do kind of what I do with some people who say they're going to do the show, and they're kind of go away. I give them monthly, hey, just checking back in, seeing if you'd be interested on the show. Blah,
do you
blah,
say
blah.
It like that too? Hi.
Well, let me see. I sent 5 emails to this person.
Uh-huh.
Three started with hey, two started with hi.
Oh, so, whoa, okay. So hey, hi, hey.
It was hey, hey, hi, hi, hey.
Also, so, can you message me who we're talking about? I won't reveal the name either, but
all right.
Yeah, I need to know so we're on the same page here.
All right.
Mike's typing Doug Max. Got it. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I sent one out yesterday, sent a reply saying, "Hi, sorry, can't use an hour if it doesn't translate into some sort of economic revenue, and I understand that you do not pay guests. I would sometimes be able to participate for free in podcasts, etc., but right now, economic situations and where he's living is pressing. Okay. Good luck with everything."
Sure.
And it somewhat sounds professional, but something about it irks me, and I can't understand why I can't get past it. And I think it might have to do with, like, nothing about finances came up for the months that you said you were doing it, and then magically this is the reason.
Yeah, no, it's a clear money grab. It's clear he doesn't want to be bothered. And you know what? Like, it's not... Listen, no one's knocking down this dude's door to make sure he's on the podcast. Listen, you're not going to be like, "Oh, who's Rogan got on this week?" He's got Bill Burr, and he's got Ben Shapiro, and he's got Barack Obama, and this guy. This guy... Just trying to, I hate when people ask for money. Like, clearly we are a podcast that is trying to just get people on for entertainment and whatnot. And listen, screw them. that's all I can say. Like, it's not worth it. Like, yeah, your story might be cool, but that kind of begging and that kind of, like, we're not asking for 2 hours of your time. We're not asking for a day of your time. We're asking for 20 minutes. 30 minutes max, you know?
Yeah, but that's, like, one thing that irked me. I'm like, I said to myself, at what point did I say we were chatting for an hour? I think, Scott, you are the only person I've ever chatted for an hour in my lifetime.
Not true. But Larry Hankin, we talked to for 4 hours.
No, we asked a question and we sat back for an hour.
True story. We interviewed Larry Hankin from Breaking Bad and Happy Gilmore? Yeah.
Happy Gilmore, Friends.
Yeah, right. And we lost the interview because of a power outage kind of situation, and we brought him on, and he talked for even longer the second time. We were literally like, "Larry, we got to wrap it up here." It was like an hour and four. And I remember it was late, too. We're like, "Oh, my God. Like, I can't stay awake for this." He was a great guest, but, yeah.
Absolutely.
Besides the point.
Yeah. So, like, there's that, and there's also, like, if you recall, I sent you an email because the person was like, "Well, with my brand, I need to know how you would fit into it." He talked about a Spanish audience, and yes, it was like, yeah,
translate our podcast into Spanish, like the description. Yeah. You know what?
And we came back with an answer, and, like, he never replied to it. Like, even if I replied back and said, "Well, I don't think that's enough, and my schedule is busy." Number one, you're not doing what he's doing during this current COVID thing. It's not happening, and I don't want to give away the guess, because who knows, we made fun of our friend Paul Templer, the hippo attack survivor, and then 2 weeks later he actually got back to us, but
arguably the antithesis of what started this actual podcast, when I feel like that was when this podcast actually started. So
it weirdly irks me, and there's nothing I can look back in this reply where I sit back and go, it wasn't like a professional reply, but it just, some power, it's like, what did it take you this long to say you wanted money? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and if you had said you wanted money, it would have been like, carry on. You know, it's funny, because you said that, and a friend of mine emailed me this week, like, "Hey, you know, William Hung episode went up," and she was like, "Oh, cool. How do you get your guests? Do you..." First, she said, "How do you get your guests?" And I answered, mm-hmm. I said, "Hey..." And this is for anyone out there. Listen, I will peel back the curtain of Verbal Shenanigans, and it's not going to be glorious because there is no one way we get our guest. It takes a lot of work, a lot of emails, and a lot of following up. And I will say, I will only say to people, the only hint I can give you is that you got to build the resume, and we use our resume. I won't tell you how we use it, but we use our resume, aka our history, as an like a point to get a lot of more guests. To show what we've done on the show. Okay, but there is no one way. I have gotten guests through Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, phone call, word of mouth, friends,
associations with some of our
like other guests, companies, yep, and record labels. So if you want to put in that work, it's there for you. But she asked me, do you pay your guests? I say, we've never spent $1 to talk to anyone, and we will not spend $1 to talk to anyone. Well, I could be convinced, but but we have never spent a dollar. Not a dollar. We spend money to put this podcast up right now. Let's be honest.
I'm going to throw it out there. Sean Kemp, if you are listening, we are prepared to give you $1 to come on the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
Sean Kemp, if you're listening, I'll give you $100 right now to come on the podcast. Whoa. Yep.
Wow, you outbid me there. Okay.
I don't care. We need it. It is like the closing chapter of this podcast.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just one of those irk things. Oh, and I guess one other level for what this person does. I don't want to give away the answer, but this person goes around the world and relies on like the courtesy of other people. Blend them in. So again, it's another layer of the why are you asking me for money for when your cause is everything about don't worry about it. Stop begging.
I'm about to blow it up, but you know, I'll be respectful right now.
I'm trying to be, but but if you know who you are, then come on the show and defend yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
In Spanish.
No, I get it.
And then you translate it for our English audience.
But listen, we never brag. I explained this once or twice to people. Having a guest-driven show never gives you a break to be like, oh, man, remember that time we had John Walsh on the podcast? Yeah, we lived that moment for a night or two. And it was cool to promote it and send it to people. But then we went, oh, crap, we got Monday's episode coming out. Who we have on? Oh, crap, we got, you know. We've gotten to a point, like, right, Mike, like, early in this pandemic, I think we had, like, what do we have, like, 10 episodes in the book? Like, 10 interviews in the book, and we're like, we got to.
Minimum.
We have to put out a bunch of episodes to get these out.
Like, but the funniest part was, like, when we were going over the release schedule, and one of us would always forget. It's like, oh, yeah, that's still out there.
Yeah. So we've almost caught up now. And I will tell you right now, Mike and I are still scheduling guests every week, looking for, scouring for guests. And there's no one way. There's no one way. So that's the only advice I could give you. But it has always been hard work, or at least, like, persistent work, following up. Being on top of your game and being like, we're not even a great podcast, but we have had great guests. That's the only thing I can say. That's the only thing I can say about what we do. But
we're another 5 years away from being a great podcast.
Right.
So just stay tuned. Just listen to the interviews and be like, they're almost there.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I had one other thing. I'll save that for Monday. I think it's time to go. We talked for a while. Berlo, anything to promote before we get out of here?
I'm going to promote a show that we're going to be on in the coming weeks, the Life Radio Show.
If
you're in Dayton, Ohio, WWSU 106.9, it's a show hosted by Don Smith. We're going to be on the show just chatting things about the podcast and life and going over some weird news stories, but show some love over to Don Smith. The name is The Life Radio Show.
Yeah. And it should be a good time. And I'll promote, I don't know, I guess I'll just promote something completely off the cuff. I was at the liquor store yesterday, and a guy was there selling stuff, and I had seen their stuff online. It's non-alcoholic, actually. And normally you think of non-alcoholic beer as pretty gross and disgusting, but it's called Athletic Brewing Company. They basically make IPAs with like a bunch of hoppiness, but non-alcoholic. It's like meant for like people who run races and people who, out camping, but don't want to get, they don't want to get stewed or banged up. And it was actually pretty damn good. I'm not going to lie. So I'm just promoting this out of the fact that I thought their product was pretty cool and way better than anything else on the market. So that's Athletic Brewing Company, based out of Stratford, Connecticut. And apparently they're going to be brewing in San Francisco, too. So pretty cool.
I think you should send some of that to your Zoom buddy.
Oh, yeah.
And, and then finally, maybe he can last the night.
Yeah. Somehow he'd still pass out. But anyway, guys, it's been a lot of good weeks here on the podcast. We've been getting a lot more listens lately, which is good, which means you're out there. The best thing you can do is leave us a review or send us a DM or something and say you're listening and share it with your friends. Share it with somebody and go back in our catalog and check out the different guests we've had. But that's it. I'm going to stop rambling now, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye.
Bye.